American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting from the internet for Monday, February 28th, last day of February. It's the most fucked up month there is. All the other months have more than 30 days, except for February. That's why it's all fucked up. Hence the expression, all fucked up like February. And you're listening to Newsreel, the law global sit rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow all these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk, Red Mercury SE, RSN1, SRN1 as well. Wild Bunch Radio, KJAG Radio, Osprey Networks, Creek Radio, iTunes, Podcast.com, Podcast Alley, and every Thursday night at 7 o'clock, you can join us in Second Life Node Archers at grid 155-74666, along with Agent Dax Static, Ava Mode, Anastasia Jennings, Anthony L, Metaluna, Sir Dark Evermore, Xerxes Core, his core is his middle name is Hard, Dark One Sunkiller, Flash DUI, JC Denson, Jonas Vincent, Cade Nero, not to be confused at all with Shade Firo, different guy, Kimmy Sahara, Larklin Dark Matter, I think, because his name's covered, no, that's who it is, Legion Roatsman, because he has many, Max the Toking Cat, Thorville, Bindi Starek, who's always just stunning, Morp Sky Tower, and Napalm Howlett, because when you get hit by Napalm, what do? Well, you howl it. And, of course, let's not forget that we're on Radio 99, transmitting on a frequency of 6673.3 kilohertz. Sim has died. His veganness, he died of veganism. And don't let this happen to you. Friends, don't let friends be vegans. I was quiet for too long. And eventually, we found him. He digested himself. Slowly, from the inside out. It was like Ebola in reverse. It's like Sumerian's disease. No, it's actually not true. He's in school right now, so he had too much homework, and my computer is still kind of broken because we couldn't get our audio levels set up because of Skype, which we installed when I did my little interview with Evan. And I hope he gets a really good mark on his paper because he's destroyed my life in order to, you know, make his paper. So I hope you get a good grade on it, man. I hope you do, because it's destroyed me. I blame you. It was you. No, it's not your fault. It's Skype. So, yeah, I've already dispatched the Army of the Flying Monkeys to bring me the head of the Skype guy. Dear Sean, let's look at some feedback off the top. This is stuff that people send me because they listen to the show. Dear Sean, well, actually, I write most of it, but I pretend other people. I pretend, you know, I have friends and stuff. Thank you for posting the clip about Judge Ciavera and the start of episode 491. Yes, that was the judge. I'm probably saying that wrong. It's Ciavera. It's kind of whatever language that is. It's basically Cyrillic for douchebag. And what he did was he was taking money to put kids in jail. So they'd send him off to the private institutions and he'd get kickbacks. Anyway, this happened close to where I live. So I feel that the kids that this corrupt judge put through the system, possibly ruining their lives, need to have their story heard. Thought you'd be interested to know that he has been convicted, still awaiting sentencing. Thank you very much, Malcav, who, of course, a longtime listener to the show, always involved. Good to hear. And I hope that judge gets federally ass-rammed by someone who's not gentle. You know, fuck you very much for profiting on the suffering of children, you piece of shit. Another piece of feedback here. Hey, guys! Thanks for keeping the show rolling. It helps me going through some of my less than awesome work days. Well, you know, it's something that we do. We've been doing it for a long time, so glad that it helps. And I've been getting a bunch of those lately, too. A bunch of people have been chiming in going, hey, man, just in case you're wondering, you know, the show actually means something to me. So, you know, and it's always the same thing. You carried me through some dark times, which is bizarre. to me, because, like, I didn't carry anything. All I did was distract you a little bit while somebody was doing open-heart surgery on your head, perhaps, or whatever it was. But really, you know, you're the one who got yourself through it. I just, you know, was a dancing monkey somewhere along the way. And, you know, Sim makes the monkey dance that much better. So it's we're glad that we could be a part of your life journey. Anyway, a couple of episodes ago, you asked us about WOG smartphones. And from the opinion of someone with a background in phones, I worked telecom for several years after college, dealing specifically with cellular tech on the back-end transport side, as well as being a developer for several platforms. I'm also probably the biggest cellular nerd you will find. Good enough. Now, see, this is actually the letter I was waiting for. Because, you know, when a guy justifies it by saying, by the way, I'm a freak, and I'm a freak about phones, and I know what you're asking me, and I have an answer for you. So that's nice. It's nice when you get a little bit of qualification. As for phones, the dumb phones, basically, they all run Brew OS with different skins. There's really nothing at all to this OS. No real ways to get into them. There is a text message bug that can cause the phone to reboot over and over, but nothing so far that could sniff data off the phone. So any non-smartphone would be okay, which is funny because they're always trying to recycle those. With military grade ones being tougher physically. If you're looking for a smartphone, you need the security and lack and you need the security and lack of vulnerability, there's really only one choice: BlackBerry. RIM is notorious for being unhackable. The phones can be encrypted in about a three-button press, and once they are, I don't know of anyone who could break the encryption. So if someone had your phone, they could pull the data off, but wouldn't be able to do anything with it. BlackBerry also has a very strong password encryption you can easily set up, which will also wipe the data after the device a set number of failed attempts, which I believe Apple does that too, but, you know, it could be a little bit different. On the back end, RIM data is encrypted and run through BIS servers. This is a proxy controlled by RIM, and the only possible weak point, however, I've seen is how they are set up. It would be nearly impossible to crack that as well. The data transmitted encrypted from the device and runs that way through the servers. Any data stored for the OTA sync is stored there in an encrypted file format that rivals anything the DoD has access to. This is why so many countries are taking swings at RIM, trying to get them to lower encryption. It's also why so many government officials are issued BlackBerry devices. The downside to BlackBerry is they aren't as media-centric as other smartphones. You won't be able to watching videos in high def, but you'll have saved data, which is, I use a BlackBerry actually, so kind of handy. And if anybody has any groovy, like, what stuff you can do to cool up your BlackBerry, I'm personally interested. The second option, and Sean, you will probably dislike hearing this one, is the iPhone. Dun, 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 dun. It's far harder to crack than Android or WebOS, and old Steve has his ecosystem very locked down, and this plays to an advantage. Apple is not an advertising company as such. They track much less data. Jobs and the gang couldn't care less about your web browsing or other statistics. They sell hardware. Now, Apple does not encrypt the data to the point that RIM does, which is the phone's biggest flaw. But there are apps that will wipe the phone after so many failed password attempts. Also, since the phone is tied to an iTunes account, so is a backup file. That makes it harder to get the data, but much easier than a BlackBerry file. WebOS and Android would be a last resort choice. WebOS is easy to crack, and Android is screaming your data at everyone. Remember, Google is above all an advertising company. Everything they do is meant to get your eyes on their ads and feed data to the companies for better ad placement. Many Android phones track everything from web stats to app usage, anything else Google could build to better advertising. You're basically a walking test market while using Android. Not that he's, you know, got an opinion about it or whatever. We all have the devices here, and we all use them regularly to track things that phones do and to test apps. My daily carries right now are a Samsung Captivate Android and a BlackBerry Torch. Bet you can get which one has my important data. I also have the iPhones and a couple of WebOS phones for testing because I'm just that much of a geek. Thanks, guys. Keep up the show and hope some of this data was helpful to the community. Thank you very much. No fix. Well, yes, it was. Yes, it was. Finally, you know, that kind of touches all the bases. And for the first time in a long while, I feel cool about actually having a BlackBerry. So, hooray me! Hooray me. Dear Sean and Sim. Now, this was a Sort Yourself Out segment. And it's to Sean and Sim, but Sim's not here, so fuck him. More meat for the meat eaters. My name is Nick. Hi, Nick. I'm 22 and a community college graduate. Good for you. I live in Palmdale, California, and unfortunately unemployed due to closure of Circuit City and no possibilities so far for reemployment. I've just received information regarding the possibility of my house and neighborhood going under what government likes to call eminent domain. The reason why this is to happen, because of the speed rail car, which to me is the government saying, hey guys, we're communists now, giving your stuff, which puts me and my parents, my family, my neighborhood, and friends in an uproar. Now, before I go on, I must inform you that we have not received an actual letter yet, but three of the four possible paths they may choose will cut through my house, literally. So please, if you have any ideas, plans, or helps, in any way you can give me, I beseech you to help. I'm going to try my best to fight this till a death, and if we're impossibly going to fight the stupid commute ideas and commute ideas and try to help my area get better ideas to promote growth and having to rely on the nearby cities to survive. I've already started research on eminent domains, how to fight it, and petitioning. Well, it sounds like you got it well in hand. But I want to start looking at possibilities of getting the media involved and other more successful tools. I figured since you guys have way more knowledge about this kind of stuff than you do than I do about getting people to stand up and fight the good fight, unfortunately, these kinds of laws are not my forte. So I was hoping you could give me ideas on the best way, speech-wise and attitude-wise, to get the station, papers, and officials that aren't necessarily worried about this one for some reason bias against my ideals. I want to fight this not just for me or my family, but for my neighbors. Evil ones, I don't know at all. I always feel like I need to win this for Palmdale. In any small way, to give hope to those in similar situations to fight on and to help get the people of Kids Today not to stand for what the government feeds them. Please, guys, I truly need your help to win this battle so we can possibly win the war against the stupidity that has enveloped the government, maybe win some people to the critical thinking side. Your fellow critically thinking human being and longtime listeners of yours, Nick. Okay, well, you know, I appreciate what you're saying here. A couple of things right off the bat. Now, I love you, Nick. I really do, but I'm going to give it to you straight here. First of all, you don't know whether or not it's come to your house. Okay, so it could be a lot of drama for nothing. Okay, so you got to know whether or not you're under threat. Okay. And maybe that's a good point. Now's the time that you can start making noise because they haven't made a decision yet. So if they start figuring out that, hey, this guy's giving a problem, let's go with a different plan, the one that doesn't involve cutting this guy's house off because nobody really wants to have a fight. But you want to find out whether or not you're actually under threat. Now, the other side of this, too, is why are you so tied to your house? I've marveled at this. You know, it's really like, why are you so tied to this house? Well, it's the idea of it. You know, they're going to do that, man. I mean, they're going to do it. And it's just a house, really. It is just a house. And the neighborhood, you can move. I think a bigger problem here is that you're unemployed right now. Okay, so I think the bigger problem here is that you need to get a job because you're unemployed. So you're unemployed, you want to go against the government because they want to take your house for eminent domain? I mean, that's not really a winning proposition here. So right off the top, I'd be considering some other options that you have available for you. Okay, you're 22 and you've got and you're a graduate from college. I mean, you know, not to sound like the broken record, Sim always bothers me, but you know, have you ever considered a career in the armed forces? Because I bet you could be an officer, especially with a degree. I think that's all you need is once you got a degree, you're pretty much in there. But I digress. Now, what you asked me was, how do I fight this? Well, okay, whether or not you want to fight it is your business. I'm not really sure this is a fight you want to take on. I think you've got bigger fish to fry in your life. But if I was going to fight this, you definitely want to get all the cameras in there you can, get as many crying children and grandmothers and people who are, you know, desperate and poor, and they just want to live there. So you play the moral card right quick. Okay, and you make sure that you have like a bake sale and you do all this stuff. So it's kind of it's a good idea, you know, to do that. And that way, if you can get on the moral high ground, it becomes awkward. So the time to do that might be now, so that you become a bit of a problem before they make the decision, so that the people making the decision are like, oh, crap. You know what? These guys are causing problems. So make sure that you, if you print up any flyers like "Save this town" or whatever, make sure you plaster them all over City Hall, like under the windshields of cars at City Hall, and say there's a rally at this one point. But don't make it near City Hall. Just make it look like so that you're sure that everybody in City Hall knows that there's some kind of groups trying to stop this thing from going through their neighborhood, and they're drawing it up. That might be all it takes. A bunch of photocopied flyers underneath some windshields, and they go, "Oh, hey. You know what, guys are getting all, you know, whipped into a frenzy about this." And, you know, especially if you can get it on even if you get it on community television, as seen on Channel 6 or whatever, you know, I mean, you can get some, a little bit of volume going there and get a little bit of momentum. Local radio shows are always looking. It's the beast that must be fed, right? And make sure you got someone who's on the forefront who looks, you know, fairly lovable.
If you're a psychopath with like tattoos all over your face and steel going through your eyes, it's probably not going to win the hearts and minds when you have, you know, the single mom who's just trying to do her best. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, simple psychological operations there. So, you know, that would be my approach on this. But right now, honestly, I think you need to start being more concerned about, you know, the fact you don't have a job, and less concerned about waving signs around, because, you know, that's kind of hippie talk. When you stop working and start waving signs around, not a great thing. So that's, I don't know if that's the advice you wanted to hear, brother, but that's what I got for you. Now, into some news. Speaking of PSYOPs, how about this one, which the entire goddamn world sent me? The U.S. Army illegally ordered a team of soldiers specializing in psychological operations to manipulate visiting American senators into providing more troops and funding for the war. This is what Rolling Stone has learned. When an officer tried to stop the operation, he was railroaded by military investigators. The orders came from the command of Lieutenant General William Caldwell, Bill Caldwell, three-star general in charge of training Afghan troops, the linchpin of U.S. strategy in the war. Over a four-month period last year, a military cell devoted to what is known as information operations at Camp Eggers in Kabul was repeatedly pressured to target visiting senators and other VIPs who met with Caldwell. When the unit resisted the order, arguing that it violated U.S. laws prohibiting the use of propaganda against American citizens, it was subject to the campaign of retaliation. My job in PSYOPs is to play with people's heads, to get the enemy to behave the way we want them to behave, said Lieutenant Colonel Michael Holmes, leader of the IO unit, who received an official reprimand after bucking orders. I'm prohibited from doing that to our own people. When you ask me to do these skills on senators and congressmen, you're crossing the line. The list of targeted visitors was long, including interviews with members of the IO team and internal documents obtained by Rolling Stone. Those signaled out in the campaign included Senators John McCain, Joe Lieberman, Jack Reed, Al Franken, Carl Levin, Representative Steve Israel in the House Appropriations Committee, Mike Mullen of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the Czech ambassador to Afghanistan, the German interior minister, and a host of other influential think tank analysts. So, you know, these are other, you know, government officials of other governments as well. The incident offers an indication of just how desperate the U.S. command is in Afghanistan to spin the American civilian leaders in supporting an increasingly unpopular war. According to the Defense Department's own definition, PSYOPs, the use of propaganda and psychological tactics to influence emotions and behaviors, are supposed to be used exclusively on hostile foreign groups. Federal law forbids the military from practicing PSYOPs on Americans, and each defense authorization bill comes with a propaganda rider that also prohibits such manipulation. Everyone in the PSYOPs, intel, and IO community knows you're not supposed to target Americans, says a veteran member of another PSYOP team who has run operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's what you learn on day one. When Holmes and his four-man team arrived in Afghanistan in November 2009, their mission was to assess the effects of U.S. propaganda on the Taliban and local Afghan population. By the following month, Holmes began to receive orders from Caldwell staff to direct his expertise on a new target, visiting Americans. At first, the orders were administered verbally. According to Holmes, who attended at least a dozen meetings with Caldwell to discuss operations, the general wanted the IO unit to do a kind of seemingly innocuous work, usually delegated to two dozen members of those public affairs staff, compiling detailed profiles on the VIPs, including their voting records, their likes and dislikes, and their hot-button issues. In one email, Holmes, Caldwell staff also wanted to know how to shape the general's presentations to the visiting dignitaries and how best to refine our messaging. Now, is this really wrong? Because all the PSYOPs is, really, all PSYOPs is advertising. Really, right? They want to influence your behavior using emotions. So, is that not advertising? So, by the military's own definition, I would say that PSYOPs is really advertising. So, all the Army did was get their advertising people together and get them to try to get more money. So, I think they're trying to make a big deal about a whole lot of nothing here. I just think that we should, you know, take the gloves off and go, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, they did that. You know, but is that any worse than, you know, people showing a bunch of tits and ass on TV with Coca-Cola? Is it really? Because I'm not too sure it is. I'm not too crazy about the Army being used on itself and the fact that this guy's been reprimanded for it. I think that's a bit much, you know, but interesting stuff. Interesting stuff to be sure. At the very least, you know, if the Army's doing this to their own people and their own senators, well, you can imagine what the rest of us lab rats out here in society are being subjected to. Like this lovely story. How about some child tracking? This is insane. This story right here is the kind of draconian shit that I remembered. This is right out of The Running Man. In child tracking news, frustrated by students habitually skipping class. Oh, goddamn those students. Police and school officials in Anaheim, California are turning to GPS trackers to ensure they come to class. The Anaheim Union Student High School District is the first in California to test the global positioning system technology as part of a 6-week pilot program that began last week. Seventh and eighth graders with 4 unexcused absences or more this school year are assigned to carry a handheld GPS device about the size of a cell phone, about that size, because, you know, that's what cell phones are. Each morning on school days, they get an automated phone call reminding them that they need to get to school on time. Then, 5 times a day, they're required to enter a code that tracks several locations. As they leave for school, when they arrive at school, at lunchtime, and when they leave school, and at 8 p.m. At 8 p.m. at night, you have to tell the school where you are. The students are also assigned an adult coach who calls them 3 times a week to see how they're doing and help them find an effective way to make sure they get to class on time. Students and their parents volunteer for the monitoring. It's a way to avoid continuation school or prosecution with a potential stay in juvenile hall. The idea for this is not to feel like punishment, but an intervention to help them develop better habits and get to school. Well, that's interesting. Regional Director for AIM Truancy Solutions. The GPS device costs about $300 to $400. Overall, the 6-week program costs about $8 per day for each student, or about $18,000. The program is paid for by a state grant. Students who routinely skip school are prime candidates to join gangs, police say. I don't think this GPS is going to fix that. Because schools lose about $35 per day for each absent student, the program can pay for itself if more students return to class consistently, because that's all that matters. As long as there are corpses in the room, that's all that matters, right? Miller said it's been received in places, well, like San Antonio, Texas, and Baltimore, where GPS technology has been implemented. Average attendance among the chronically truant jumped from 77% to 95% during the 6-week program. That attendance rate dipped slightly once students no longer carry the tracking device, but many learn the new habits that help them, and coaches continue talking to them for a year. Local school administrators are thrilled by the concept. I'll bet they are. I bet they just think that's the best thing ever. Absolutely. We'd love to just, you know, track our kids. Why not just put webcams on them, too, so we can watch them while they're at home? No, that's a really, really unbelievably bad idea. I just... What are you preparing your kids for? I mean, is that not like school parole? Is that not like you're just preparing these kids for the idea that you're going to become some sort of a tracked commodity lab rat labor force person that has to account for every minute of their life? I'm not sure that's really a great idea. Now, of course, you know, why stop there at the 7th and 8th graders when, of course, we have yet another... This is the scariest story that will not go away, and I'm really getting worried about this one, is this pre-crime brain scanning that they're doing. Okay, this is an update. Now, I covered this story a while back, but it's gradually getting worse and worse. More researchers believe, more than before, that before there was 3, now there's 7. More researchers believe that violent tendencies have a biological basis, and that tests and brain imaging can pick them up in children. They argue that by predicting which children have the potential to be trouble, treatments could be introduced to keep them on the straight and narrow. If the tests are accurate enough to form a screening could be introduced. In some ways, we test for diseases. The theories we put forward by 2 leading criminologists in the American Association of Advancements of Science in Washington. Professor Adrian Rain, a British criminologist, argued that abnormal physical brain makeup could be the cause of criminality, as well as helping to predict it. His studies have shown that psychopaths and criminals have smaller areas of the brain, such as the amygdala and prefrontal cortex, both of which regulate control emotional behavior. He also believes that a lack of conditioning to fear punishment, which can be measured in toddlers before disruptive behavior is apparent, could also be a strong indicator. So, they're looking for people that have a fear lack of conditioning to fear punishment. Interesting. Interesting phrase there. A lack of conditioning to fear punishment. So that's like rebellious? What is that? What do you call that? Heart? Individual will? What would you call that? Dr. Natalie Frontaine, who also spoke at the conference, argued that children as young as 4 exhibited callous, unemotional traits, such as a lack of guilt and empathy, that could also suggest future bad behavior. Linking these features with a conduct problem, such as throwing tantrums, could be a strong way to predict who would be antisocial in later life. Both speakers said that identifying these issues earlier could be important in stopping children from becoming criminals. Dr. Rain, a former home office psychologist who worked with the University of Pennsylvania, said therapy could include counseling to counter innate behavior problems and boosting the brain with drugs or rich foods in omega-3. Yes, that's the solution to bullying, omega-3. Dr. Fontaine from the Indiana University said the work showed that punishment did not necessarily work and that reinforced positive behavior rather than punishing bad might be the solution. If we identify those children early enough, we can help them as well as their families. Dr. Fontaine used the data from about 9,000 twins from the Twins Early Development Study, a survey of twins born in England and Wales between 1994 and 1996. Creepy. Assessments of callous emotional traits and conduct problems were based upon teacher questionnaires when the children were 7, 9, and 12. Information was taken from parents when the children were as young as 4. She found there was a correlation between risk factors and young age of bad behavior and at an older age. Dr. Rain said he acknowledged the ethical implications for treating children before they'd done anything wrong, but argued that biological causes of crime could not be ignored. We could be ostriches and stick our heads in the sand, but I believe we have to pursue the cause of crime at a biological and genetic level as well as at the social, he said. Yeah, that's downright terrifying. So, you know, don't let your kids be scanned for pre-crime, and if they do, make sure they know how to lie in these little questionnaires. You know what I mean? Don't have a sense of humor. You know, of course, and you must definitely, no, I'm afraid of punishment. Don't humiliate me. That'll be terrible. You know, wow. I shudder to think what would have happened if these laws came in years ago, where I would have wound up. You know, that's for sure. They'd probably have me locked up in some institution somewhere, for sure. For sure. Now, for those of you who are unaware of the concept of manifest destiny, this is an interesting sort of law. Now, the Americans won't care about this very much, but the Canadians might get kind of pissed off. And we were talking about this before, but now it's been signed into law. The Canada and the United States have signed an agreement that paves the way for militaries from either nation to send troops across each other's borders during an emergency, but some are questioning why the Harper government has kept silent on the deal. Neither the Canadian government nor the Canadian forces announced the new agreement, which was signed on February 14th in Texas. The U.S. military's Northern Command, however, publicized the agreement with a statement outlining how its top officer, General Jen Rousseau, and Canadian Lieutenant General Maire Dumas, head of Canada's command, signed the plan, which allows the military for one nation to support the armed forces of the other nation during a civil emergency. The new agreement has been greeted with suspicion by the left wing in Canada and the right wing in the U.S. The left-leaning Council for Canadians, which is campaigning against what it calls increasing integration of the United States and Canadian militaries, is raising concerns about the deal. It's the kind of a trend that comes to the issues of the Canadian-U.S. relations and contentious issues like military integration. We see that this government is reluctant to disclose information to Canadians that is readily available on American and Mexican websites, said Stuart True, the researcher for the Council of Canadians. Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, this whole manifest destiny is the idea that all of pretty much Canada and the United States is going to become one nation. And there's a lot of talk going on right now about, you know, building the superhighways and things like that. So how would you know when that happened? Would that be something that they just say, okay, now one day it's like that? Or would they be more likely to try to stretch that out just about as far as they can until, you know, they get all the kids used to being basically slaves anyway? They're walking around with their GPS tracking devices. Their every modem is logged and cataloged. They have no privacy. They have no time for them to develop, to grow, to create surprises, to surprise themselves. There's absolutely nothing left. So, you know, at that point, there's not going to be the old world. It's going to be the new world order. And that's what it's going to be. So, maybe it's already happened. Maybe that's already occurred where essentially, for all, every intents and purpose, it's kind of a joke to think that we're separate nations now. And we all cling to these ideas and these flags and these symbols and our houses. And we all stay, oh, you know, I don't want to lose that. I don't want to. Well, life has changed and we have to learn to adapt to that. That's easy for me to say. Easy for me to say. But, you know, it's hard to put into practice. Very, very much. But this is definitely what's going on around us as we speak. So we can cling to the ideas of separate nations and all that kind of jazz. But we got to get over it because I didn't choose to be a Canadian. You didn't choose to be whatever nationality you are. We're all just people. We got to, you know, get past the symbols and leave those for the symbol-minded. In pharma fascist news, of course, this is the big cure, isn't it? Right? This is the big cure, is that if you're a thinking person and you're depressed, we're just going to drug the shit out of you. And, you know, they've got the money. So, you know, people would think that if they drug you and it's bad, you know, at least you're going to get paid, right? Because if you take bad drugs that they give you and you sue them, you should be able to get money for that, right? No, that's not the way it works. In a pharma fascist news, thank you very much, name redacted, sent this in, pharma fascist news. Vaccine makers are protected from lawsuits. The Supreme Court ruled Tuesday, dashing the hopes of a U.S. couple who had sought monetary damages after their daughter fell ill after a round of childhood inoculations. By a 6-2 vote, the U.S. High Court, in an opinion written by Justice Antoine Scalia, rejected the family's argument that they should be allowed to sue the drug maker wife for not making a safer vaccine. The case concerned Hannah Bruschwitz, whose 6-month-old infant received a series of injections to protect her against diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, the illness also known as whooping cough. Gotcha. The family, the northeastern state of Pennsylvania, found that after the third injective, the cognitive development of their now teenage daughter slowed dramatically, and she developed seizures and other health problems that continue to this day. The family insists the girl's medical problems were a side effect to the vaccine. White, the manufacturer of the years, has steadfastly denied that any link existed between the girl's consistent condition and the vaccine. The U.S. High Court ruled that the vaccine maker, which is owned by Pfizer, is the world's largest pharmaceutical company, is Pfizer, is not subject to liability laws that govern some other products. The court ruled that the design defect lawsuits were preempted by a 1986 law in the National Childhood Vaccine Inquiry Act, which created national compensation program for vaccine injury claims and also gave vaccine makers protection from some lawsuits. The law allows for complaints to be brought before a special tribunal. The family had early pleaded with and lost its case before that panel. The ruling also affirms a lower court decision that also found in favor of Wythe. In a statement, the American Academy of Pediatrics hailed the ruling. So it's interesting that, yeah, you can go out. So, you know, now they've lost and they've gone to the Supreme Court and they're screwed. There's nothing they can do for it. You know, they're not going to be able to get any money for this based on these interesting laws, which are now in place to protect these, you know, pharma fascist pricks. And, you know, we're all lab rats anyway, right? So if they shoot us up full of drugs, you know, just take your needles, take your meds, go to bed, watch your books, you know, watch the TV. However, they feed you the TV now. If you want to have it on your iPad, you can stream it from wherever. You know, of course, there's some restreaming has been broadcast illegal now. It's all the same problems. It's all the same problems. It's just the devices are changing, right? And the message, of course, is becoming far more deadly because there's so much more research being done on the mind these days, which is just staggering, staggering. Now, of course, pharma fascism is taking over. And you're thinking, wow, and then they're getting people to, you know, carry around GPS devices. You know, that's pretty cool. Augmented reality, which I also like, is cool. But now, of course, there's the other trend. Never mind the pre-crime. Let's talk about the wireheads. These are actually, you know, when the days of they put a microchip in my brain, when that was just, you know, crazy talk, instant crazy talk, they put a microchip in my head. Somebody said that you were a nutter, okay? Well, not so much. They call them brain pacemakers, which is interesting. Tiny implants that hold promise for fighting tough psychiatric diseases. And if science can figure out just where all that gray matter, where just to put them in all that gray matter. Deep brain stimulus, or DBS, has provided a powerful way to block the tremors of Parkinson's disease. Blocking mental illness isn't nearly as easy a task. But A push is on to expand research into how way these brain stimulators tackle the most severe cases of depression, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and Tourette's syndrome to know best how to use them before too many doctors and patients clamor to try. It's not a light switch, cautions Dr. Michael Okun, University of Florida. Unlike with tremor patients, the psychiatric patients who respond to DBS tend to improve gradually, sometimes to their frustration. And just because of the tics of the Tourette's fade or the depression lightens doesn't mean patients can abandon traditional therapy. They also need help learning to function as much as the recipients of hip replacements undergo physical therapy, said Dr. Helen Mayberg of Emory University. Once your brain is returned to you, now you have to learn how to use it. That's an interesting phrase. She told the annual meeting of the American Association for Advancement of Science. Roughly 70,000 people, 70,000 people around the world have undergone deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's or other movement disorders when standard medications fail. 70,000 people. How does it work? Surgeons implant a wire deep into the brain, tiny electric jolts running from a pacemaker-like generator near the collarbone of the neck of the electrode disable overactive nerve cells to curb the shaping. Scientists figured out which spot to target based on surgery that sometimes helps worst-case Parkinson's patients by destroying patches of brain tissue. Now, with deep brain stimulation, the electrodes don't destroy the tissue. Electrical signals can be adjusted and even turned off if they don't help, or if they cause neurological side effects. The surgery, however, does sometimes cause dangerous bleeding or infections. Psychiatric illnesses require a similar operation, but surgeons must implant the electrodes into a different spot in the brain. And there's the rub. It's not what is best for the psychiatric diseases. In fact, two manufacturers, Medtronic and St. Jude Medical, have begun major studies on DBS effects on depression. Each places the implant in different regions based on promising pilot studies. Now, what happens when they discover, hey, when we wire up this into a woman's brain, she becomes absolutely sexually charged. She's a total lust machine. Let's say that gets discovered. So they discover a way that they can stick a wire in a woman's head, any woman, and she just turns into a total fuckbot. Where do you suppose that kind of information is going to wind up? You know, what could possibly go wrong with information like this? How could this be used in a bad way, where they could take anyone and turn them into, like, pimps have now become, have gone high-tech with stuff like this? Interesting sort of conundrum, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say? So this kind of stuff, it's one of those kind of stories that you look at this and you go, wow, the opportunities for abuse here are so incredibly ripe. Not only that, let's look at ideas for, your ability to not sleep or different ways you could maybe remember more. I mean, you could come up with an entire spider web of applications using deep brain stimulus. Definitely more stories. So if you're out there and you're listening to this, you hear any more stories on deep brain stimulus, something that the WOGs here want to watch that. Also, here's the other side of it. What if you go into some weird electric field? You know how they got those electric fields? If you got a pacemaker, you're not supposed to go near them because they, like, cause your pacemaker to go crazy. You know, and further to that, I'm really sure that as this technology progresses, they're going to wire your brain and the device is going to be wired to the web. So essentially, you've wired your brain to the web. It's what's going on. The minute they got that kind of chain on you, I mean, you may as well just turn over the keys to the kingdom right there. You know, the really frightening thing about this is how long before they claim, oh, hey, you know what? We can rehabilitate criminals this way. We know what areas of the brain cause criminal behavior, right? We've seen that. Previous story showed that. So instead of wasting all this money on prisons, why don't we just wire up criminals? You know, this guy was caught smoking a joint 3 times. He's a criminal, right? So we're going to wire him up so that he's now a good functioning member of society. And, you know, we all know a good functioning member. He likes Oprah. He fears punishment. You know, that these are all, you know, the things that we want. So,
Yeah, I'm thinking about buying a boat. I don't know about you. I'm thinking about, doing some sailing, getting offshore, maybe, kind of creating an underground railroad to get other people who want to survive away from the brand new wireless concentration camps, which is an interesting way of doing it. What if you had a concentration camp without any wire? What would it be? It'd be a Wi-Fi concentration camp here on Camp Wi-Fi. In guided revolution news. Now, am I the only one who kind of thinks that this whole thing that's going on with the Middle East right now is pretty goddamn convenient? There's an awful lot of stuff going on here that's seems to be, it just doesn't feel right. I don't know why it doesn't feel right, but it doesn't really feel genuine. Then I found this particular story, which I thought was kind of interesting. You remember during the Egyptian protests, which was supposedly all super impromptu and everything was all, the people in the streets are ready. Well, they were all carrying, there's a lot of scenes where they're all carrying signs made by the same people. Like, as if somebody showed up with a trailer full of signs and started handing signs out to the people. So, that's great, I guess. But I'd like to know, why are you there with all these signs? How come you have these signs ready? Let's just reverse engineer this. Very interesting stuff. And then we came across this little tidbit of news, which was sent in by Mook. Thank you very much. First noted by geopolitical analyst and historian Dr. Webster Tarpley, some suspicious similarities could be seen through the Egyptian unrest and another known U.S.-backed uprising in Serbia. Serbia's UTPOR, or the resistance, was funded to the tune of millions by the U.S. National Endowment for Democracy. Its signature clenched fist logo adorned flags, signboards, and t-shirts carried by a U.S. State Department laid astroturf until the ousting of Slobodan Milankovic in 2000. The exact same logo would turn up 11 years later across the Mediterranean Sea in the streets of Cairo, illustrating further the preposterous foreign-backed nature of the Egyptian uprising. Could it just be coincidence that Dr. Tarpley's take is mere speculative conjecture? Not even close. After its success, Serbia's UTPOR would continue to receive and funds from the West, become a CIA coup college of sorts under the name CANVAS, Center for Applied Nonviolent Actions and Strategies. It appeared that after that, the Egyptian April 6 youth movement finished. It appears that after the Egyptian April 6 youth movement finished attending a U.S. State Department funded by CONFAB in New York City 2008, it would make a trip to visit CANVAS 2009. From there, it took CANVAS's curriculum and applied their logo and then began assembling a U.S.-funded mob in Egypt. Among CANVAS's current partners are the Albert Einstein Institution, Freedom House, and the International Republican Institute. The IRI includes amongst its board of directors John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Brent Scofaro, and John McCain says, "We should have seen this coming," in regards to the unrest in Egypt. He obviously isn't talking about himself, since he helped make it happen. Now see, it's a very interesting series of events going on over there, and it kind of rings a little bit true. So I think that there's definitely a lot of power going on when the game is afoot here. I think a lot of people are going to be making power grabs. Libya, of course, is sitting on a ton of oil right now, and as of this recording, Gaddafi's still running the show. I can't imagine him. He's going to live another 24 to 48 hours. But, it's a miracle to me why no one has just removed him yet. Maybe he's running these Cameroon mercs in there that are machete-wielding psychopaths that are just butchering his people. We're approaching, war crime level of psychosis going on in Libya right now, and my heart goes out to those people. But I guess super crazy guy is, he needs to get removed from the equation. And it's going to be interesting to see how the entire Arab world shakes out after this. Algeria is shaken up. Yemen's all shaken up. Very, very interesting. Maybe this is maybe there's a little bit more mission creep than what they had in mind when they saw this kind of a thing. I don't know. Very, very interesting. But sure, there sure was a lot of media on Egypt, though, hey? And now, of course, the media spread over to Libya because now they got a nice murder going on there. So maybe the rest of the world says, well, yeah, we'll get rid of them. We'll just show everyone how expensive it was. So maybe those kids in Algeria won't really mean it when they know that it's going to cost, so many thousand dead in order to just get one stupid dictator. And, for those of you keeping track at home, this is why special forces are a good thing. This is why you need to be able to get into a country and take out somebody like that without, putting hundreds of thousands of lives in danger and killing a bunch of innocent civilians. I'm just saying. So interesting story there. Let's get into some cyberpunk kit, because after all, hey, we're living in the future. Let's get with the good stuff. How about some cyber knees? This is an interesting idea. Being a guy who had a bad knee, I think this is cool. Like the treads of car tires, all the important cartilage within our knees is slowly wearing down. By the age of 65, in fact, nearly 50% of us are likely to suffer from painful degeneration of this cartilage called osteoarthritis. It is estimated that 1 in 8 will suffer so badly that it will require partial or full knee replacement via surgery within our lifetime. As barbaric as this may sound, to replace part of your knee with an artificial component, a privately held company named Comformis has pioneered a surgery, pioneered a technology to produce a custom-fit 3D implants using patient CT scans to resurface bone and minimize the amount of tissue cut out. Comfort MIS is trailblazing a revolutionary trend in medicine in which medical devices are tailored precisely to the individual patient, reducing surgery times and speeding up recovery, and improving patient satisfaction, which, after all, is the most important thing. Suddenly becoming cybernetic doesn't sound so bad. About 500,000 knee replacement surgeries are currently conducted in the United States every year, and that number is expected to rise above 3 million in the next 15 years. Current implants require a number of cuts to the femur and tibia to fit the device. Additionally, many of the products that are currently on the market are off-the-shelf devices that come in a few sizes, so surgeons have to slice off even more of the bone in order to get them to fit. This can lead to long surgeries and increase the discomfort of recovery, as well as the time it takes to get back to normal, usually 6 to 8 weeks. With some knee replacements, can last 20 years without noticeable wear. Patients that need another replacement may have difficulty because they've already had a significant amount of bone removed. This is expected to be a growing problem as the average age of patients that are seeking knee replacements is decreasing as people are staying active later in life. Very interesting stuff. So yet another reason to make sure that you work out and stay in shape. Once again, don't be fat. All right, now, a little bit more positive. I saw this. I posted on it on Facebook. I hope it actually gets built. They say it's going to, but yes, the RoboCop statue monument is a go. Like it or hate it, RoboCop statue soon becoming to Detroit. Tuesday evening, organizers met their goal of raising $50,000 just 6 days after the whimsical campaign began. Pete Hotlett, an Oakland, California advertising entrepreneur, pushed the campaign and its goal, donating $25,000 online. The 32-year-old said he saw it as an effort to help Detroit. Detroit has an amazing history, and it's one of those places where something like this fits in. The average contribution from 15,000 people was about $17, according to Corktown resident James Pfaffendorf of the RoboCop campaign leaders. As of Sunday, the campaign had raised $60,539, and there still had 33 days to go, according to the Kickstarter.com. The website was used to raise funds. People were really interested in making something happen in Detroit. The statue of half-man, half-robot crime fighter, immortalized in 1987, would appear on a privately owned land near Michigan Central Depot downtown. The initiative began as something of a lark last week when Mayor Dan Bring responded to a question on Twitter when he said the city had no plans to build a RoboCop statue. It has since generated national media attention and substantial debate within Detroit between those who believe that a statue is fun and could be a tourist attraction and those who believe it's a silly idea at best and condescending reminder of the city's crime problems at worst. Well, I think it's fucking great. I mean, I'd rather have an Ed 209 statue, personally, but, you know. I promoted it. I support the RoboCop statue, and I think it's very, very cool. And if any of you out there did, then good for you. Now, here's a really good story about a brand new UAV. Now, did anybody see the old version of Dune? In there, you know, there was the Harkonnen house, and they had that little, like, flying needle thing. It was like a syringe filled with acid that could fly around. They were looking to, you know, to kill people. It's called a stinger or something. I can't remember what it was called, but it was really cool. And this is what this reminds me of. These new micro UAVs, a prototype robot spy ornithopter. The Nano Hummingbird has successfully completed flight trials in California. Developed by the company AeroVironment Incorporated, the miniature spy bot looks like a hummingbird complete with flapping wings. It's only slightly larger and heavier than most hummingbirds, but smaller than the largest species. The hummingbird's bird-shaped body is removable, but gives the bot an uncanny resemblance to a real hummingbird. The vehicle can hover and maneuver just like the bird. Yeah, I bet you it's a lot louder, though. The ornithopter can fly into buildings and under the control of an operator flying the spy bot with the help of a feed from its tiny video camera. The The prototype is capable of flying at speeds of up to 18 kilometers per hour and weighs 19 grams, which is about the same as a AA battery. AeroVironment's video flight test of the Nano Hummingbird flapping its nano air vehicle, flapping wing nano air vehicle, developed for DARPA. Manager of the project, Matt, said that it's been a challenging design to build a spy bot because it pushes the limitations of aerodynamics. The specifications given by the firm by the Pentagon include being able to hover in an 8-kilometer wind and being able to fly in and out of buildings via normal, being a normal door. The SpyBot was developed for the U.S. military's research arm, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. The Hummingbird appearance is intended to disguise the bot, although it would look decidedly out of place as it would attract in most places of the world, since hummingbirds are not found outside of the Americas. Which is pretty apparent, you know. So here's the SpyBot Hummingbird, except for it's not really native to anywhere inside of the Americas, and it probably doesn't sound anything like it. I think they should just abandon the whole hummingbird thing, try to stop making it look friendly, paint it black, make it look at least cool. That would be a neat idea. But it's a really cool thing to check out. Definitely want to watch the video. Kind of neat. Now, today's Daily Hacks got some good ones for you here. This first one is absolutely staggering. This is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. The Tatara Project. This is a guy who makes steel from scratch. I mean, he makes a knife from, like, the elements of steel, builds the forge and creates the whole thing, photographs the whole deal. Absolutely stunning. Amazing. Very, very cool. This will describe the building and running of a Tatara-like smelter. Operating the Tatara alone proved to be exhausting and very gratifying in the end when the steel was recovered from the bottom of the smelter. Charcoal is the fuel, the heat source, and the source of the carbon of the smelter. Charcoal has to be chopped to a specific size for the operation to run smoothly. The bore of the furnace is 11 inches, so that seems to be the right size for the charcoal, 8 to 10% of the inner diameter of the furnace. Very, very interesting. And more on that optical face paint that gets you out of, facial recognition. And this is like the most, these are great because this looks so Max Headroom. It's about the most cyberpunk looking hairstyles and everything that your cyberpunk hair helps you get past facial recognition software with CV Dazzle, sent in by ZigZag. This is the most cyberpunk story ever. CV Dazzle is camouflage from the computer vision CV. It's a form of expressive interference that when combined with makeup and hairstyle or other modifications with face detection thwarting designs. The name is derived from a type of camouflage using World War I called Dazzle, which was used to break apart the gestalt image of warships, making it hard to discern their direction, size, and orientation. Likewise, the goal of CV Dazzle to break apart the gestalt of the face or object and make it undetectable computer vision algorithms or in particular face detection. And because face detector is the first step to automated facial recognition, CV Dazzle can be used in any environment where automated face recognition systems are in use, such as Facebook, Google's Picasa, or Flickr. CV Dazzle was developed by Adam Harvey as a thesis project in New York's University Interactive Telecommunications Program in the spring of 2010 to explore ways of protecting and interfering with privacy-compromising technologies. Very, very cool. Highly recommended. And, you know, what the hell? Besides, since you're putting on a wig anyway when you're going out, why not make it look really cool? Eureka Media this week, this is a really good one to get involved with, is CD3WD. CD3WD is the world's, this was sent in by Alex, the world's economy has collapsed. There's no internet or Wikipedia. How do you rebuild society? CD3WD is a site built by programmer Alex Weir that was meant to help spur the improvement of the infrastructure of third world nations by giving them first world technology and knowledge for free. Sounds good. Everything from agriculture to technology is addressed, and it's roughly 4 DVDs worth of archived information available online for free in text and in PDF format. It is also available to download entirely in this one torrent. Not only is this project of great information resources for third world countries, but if you're in a survivalist mindset, this research would be great to keep in your local tool chest for the possible use of the future if such civilization-ending disaster ever did occur. Think of it as a repository of some of the world's most useful human knowledge and technology. The project is also looking for volunteers to add content in areas which are missing substantive content. So very, very cool. All of you WOGs out there, if you didn't know about it, take a look. And if you like it, get involved. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a WOG broadcast for free, brought to you by the WOGs Who Care. And if you cannot donate, please distribute. But if you can donate, please swing by the Rant Media website, pick up some of our media, or drop us a few bucks. If you'd like to mail me some cash, that's fun too. We also like gifts, presents, don't mail me anything that was once alive, and watch all your fresh fruits and vegetables because they'll take them from the mail. And don't send me anything that'll get you thrown in jail either. We don't want that. But if you're going to send other stuff, you can send it to Rant Media Studios, Box 95089, 370 East Broadway, Vancouver, BC, Canada, V5T1W0. And I want to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you'd like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@rantradio.com. And be sure to sign up for the Rant newsletter by sending an email to info@rantradio.com as well. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out the Psytrance, because after all, that's what it's all about. And I'm going to fade out now with a track from quite some time ago. Let's roll it back almost 20 years ago, back to April 26, 1992. Does anybody remember what's so significant about April 26, 1992? That's right. It was the LA riots, the largest uprising in U.S. history, where, when you think about it, the flavor was very different from what's going on in Egypt right now. But imagine what would happen if they kept going on April 26, 1992, and they decided to take out the government at the time. How would things be different today? Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.